Hello, this is episode number 25 of Chalk Radio, where medical experts from Children's Hospital of Orange County share their knowledge about keeping kids healthy and safe. In this episode, we speak with Dr. Stanley Gallant, medical director of the Chalk Children's Breathmobile, about the importance of getting a child's asthma under control. Dr. Gallant, welcome to Seacrest Studios. How are you today?
Thank you. Doing very well. Thank you.
Wonderful. So first of all, I would like to know, what exactly is asthma and how common is it in children?
Asthma is a blockage of the bronchial tubes, and we think asthma really is a chronic inflammatory disease, which is a big difference from what we used to think of strictly a bronchospastic disease. And because of the chronic inflammation, there's blockage of the airways that consist of mucus, swelling, and bronchospasm. It's very important to think of asthma then, particularly persistent asthma, as being a chronic disease rather than an episodic disease. In terms of frequency, asthma has been increasing over the last three decades. The general census in the United States, in children under 18 years of age, it's about 10% of all children have asthma. But what we have found in the inner city minority population, it's 20 to 30%. And we've actually studied this in our Hispanic population in Orange County. I think it's important to say at this point, how do you recognize asthma? Because I think all the statistics are based on recognition of asthma, and asthma is vastly underdiagnosed. So I want to make a point about that. So any child that has a chronic cough, particularly a cough that comes on in the middle of the night, that comes on after exercise, and that is relieved by a bronchodilator, is really a candidate for asthma. In addition, they have wheezing, an expiratory whistle that's characteristic. And this is associated with chest tightness and shortness of breath. So if those are all taken into consideration, we can really make a good diagnosis of asthma, which is really important to catch early on so that you can prevent any of the serious complications.
All right. So if a parent does notice some of those symptoms within their child, maybe a school nurse or a pediatrician thinks that a child might have asthma, what should they do? What's the next step?
Well, I think the key players, I should say, are really the parent and the primary care physician. And so the parent needs to be aware and educated, which is a key word, on the possibility their child might have asthma. And then they need to have a frank discussion with their physician. Now, their primary care physician should take a thorough history of some of the things I've mentioned, in addition to a physical examination, and also, in some cases, look for allergy that they can do with a blood test. So I think that if a parent thinks a child might have asthma, I think the next step is to discuss this with the primary care physician. And I guess we'll get on to treatment, but if the primary care physician feels that it's beyond his or her expertise, then I think an asthma specialist should be called into play.
Now, I understand. I had friends growing up that had asthma, and I really saw the effects of that in their quality of life. They missed a little bit of school. A lot of them, we kind of went back and forth about kind of being scared about having a very serious attack, asthma attack. So what happens if a child's asthma is not kept under control?
This is a very good question. I might put this in terms of the health cost, both psychological, physical, and economic, that asthma leads to. It's one of the leading causes of hospitalization and emergency department visits for children. It's the leading cause of school absenteeism, which leads to learning problems. So it is a major problem. And I think that these can pretty much be attenuated or prevented with good asthma management. And the asthma management, maybe we'll get into more detail, really consists of three things. One is prevention by getting rid of allergic triggers and non-allergic triggers in the home. Cigarette smoke is a particular problem, but it also might be their cat and dog, or it could be some other factor in the house. And this is very, very important. And this is the primary thing that I do when I see a patient, is to identify the pertinent triggers in this child's environment. Secondly, medication. And as I said before, one needs to view asthma as a chronic process, particularly if it's persistent. There's some mild asthmatics that really don't need a daily treatment, but if it's a persistent asthmatic that's having problems more than twice a week, then this kind of a patient needs to be on what we call a controller medication. That's a medication that will decrease the inflammation and prevent all these serious side effects that I mentioned with hospitalization, ED visits, and school absenteeism. And if those two things fail, then I think one needs to see a specialist. And the final part of the triple approach would be allergy injections to the key allergens. And that indeed can lead to long-term benefit.
So besides getting rid of pet dander and things like that, what are some of the other things families can do to possibly help prevent some of the symptoms of asthma?
Well, what you just said, though, is a big part of it. I mean, we're talking about behavioral changes.
Okay.
So you tell a family, you know, I want you to get rid of the cat or dog, or at least keep them out of the bedroom. Stop smoking. It kind of begins and ends with that. I mean, if you have battles over, you know, they want to sleep with the cat or dog, I think that's a big step. The biggest problem we have with treatment of medication is what we call adherence or compliance. And I think the key to that, there are a couple of keys, I think, that lead to good adherence. It all starts with trust and bonding with the doctor, because you're telling a parent that I want your child to take this medicine every single day for the next 3 months at least, when indeed the child at that point in time is doing well. They may have been in the emergency room last week, but children bounce back very quickly. So you're telling the mother to give this child a drug, a controller medication, usually an inhaled steroid, and that takes trust. It takes respect and trust on both sides. And so second point would be education. Education is a major key, and I think this takes a lot of time, and sometimes we don't see as much education in some of the medical environments that need to be, because the parent needs to be educated as to the reason. It can't just strictly be trust. They have to understand why they're taking the medicine and what the effects are if they don't take the medication. So we spend a lot of time educating the families on avoidance measures, why they need to put dust covers for the dust mite allergy and cover their pillows, and wash the sheets and bedclothes in very hot water once a week. Maybe use an air purifier, which is of questionable benefit, can help in some cases. And why they need to take the medication every day. And so we spend a lot of time on the breathmobile, and I know a lot of the physicians in the community spend a lot of time on educating families. I think that's what you can do. You can educate the families. You can build a bonding or a trust with the physician. And the parents then go into a preventative mode rather than a treatment mode. What we want to emphasize is the way to treat asthma, particularly persistent asthma, is by prevention, not by treating a crisis. You need to know how to treat crisis as well. And I might say that we have what's called an asthma action plan, which is very important to help families get through. The asthma action plan is a printed form that we give families that indicates when the patient is doing well, this is what they take, their controller medication they take every day. If the patient's not doing well, and we define what we mean by well and not well, then the patient takes what we call rescue medication, a bronchodilator. An example of this would be albuterol, and they take the two puffs every 4 hours or more frequently, depending on the symptoms. And that's in the yellow zone. And then in the green zone, in the red zone, if all of those don't help, then we give them instructions what to do. And that would take a big discussion, but essentially they need medical care at that point, either in the physician's office or in the emergency department. So there's a lot you can do. And under the care of physicians who deal with this thing, we have very good outcomes. It's one of the reasons I went into allergy, because you can cause dramatic changes in patients' quality of life in a relatively small period of time and help these kids grow up to be healthy, normal adults.
I know you touched on it a little bit with the breathmobile, and I want to get into that's something that is kind of your large passion is this breathmobile that Chuck has. And I want to know, give me a little bit more information on what it is and what you do with it.
Let me talk a little bit about that. The concept of taking the medical facility to where the patient lives is relatively new, although it's not truly new, because doctors used to go to the home. My father-in-law used to go to, in San Francisco where I grew up, he used to go to patients' homes. And in that environment, there's a great deal of comfort as opposed to coming to a formal office, which is kind of scary. I know I was scared when I was a kid going to the doctor. So in 1995, Craig Jones, who was a faculty person at USC, LA County Hospital, and head of allergy, in collaboration with the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, got funding for a new concept. They would take the asthma clinic, which was formerly in the hospital, to where the patient lived, namely the schools. So he started that in 1995. And in the late 90s, I was sitting at a medical meeting, California Allergy Society meeting, and he was presenting data on inner city kids, African-Americans and Hispanic children, that was mind-blowing. Now, mind you, I had run the allergy immunology program at UCI. I was recruited in 1971 to run their program in pediatrics, and I ran the allergy clinic, among other things. We had allergy fellows, and we couldn't get patients to come to the office, take three buses. It was very, very difficult and very harassing to these parents with limited resources. So he went to the school and got this great result. So I thought this would be a great thing for me to do, for us to do. And in 2002, I started doing it myself. And Chalk let me use one of their vans. I got a driver and nurse, and I went out myself and went to the school. And I remember at the end of the day, I thought this was one of the best things I'd ever done, because patients were kind of overwhelmed that I would come to where they live and take care of their asthma. And it's evolved since then with Chalk's help. Now, what's this, 2015? So it's 13 years we've been doing it. I hired my allergy fellow in 2003. And then we had one van. We got a large grant from California Endowment. And in 2007, we got a second van. And currently, we have two asthma vans. They're fully staffed with a provider, a nurse, and a PSR, a patient service representative, like a front office person. And we go from the North County to the South County. And we essentially have addressed all the barriers to care, namely accessibility, which is, I think, is really important to be where the families live. We not only go to schools, we go to Chalk Community Clinics, which is was not the original model, but we adapted it to that, and that's worked very well. Everyone is bilingual. You have to speak the language of the population you're dealing with to build the trust. You can't have translators, in my view. There's no cost, essentially, a small copay. And we go, and they see the same doctor or provider, they see the same nurse, same driver every time. So it's like a family thing, you know. They really are very comfortable with that. And the final thing, which I think is missing a lot in medicine, is continuity of care. We go to the same site every 4 to 6 weeks maximum, sometimes more frequently. So you can't see the patient with persistent asthma one time. You have to keep coming back. And by doing that, we've had excellent results. We've reduced school absenteeism by 70-80%. We've decreased emergency department and hospitalizations at least 50-60%. The asthma control, which is the gold standard, what we mean by asthma control, the child just operates pretty normally. We have about 70-75% of our children have well-controlled asthma. Now, that's in a Medicaid population. In nationwide, it's about 30%, 35%. So we've doubled the number of patients who are well-controlled. Our main problem is getting funding, and I just throw that in as a commercial. And Chalk's been very, very supportive, and other agencies have been supportive. So I feel blessed. This is probably the best work I've ever done, and I'm very passionate. My staff is, God bless them, they're very, very passionate about what they do, and it shows, because not only the stats I told you, but Chalk runs a patient satisfaction, I think it's called PICKER. There's a more formal name for it. And we rank higher than any of the other ambulatory clinics at Chalk. So, you know, I think that's very important that the patients be satisfied or wouldn't keep coming back. And so I think it's a good program. I think it should be exported to other specialties. And people have talked to me about that, because I think you need to go where the patients live.
Absolutely. And it speaks volumes that you have such large numbers of, you know, improvement compared to national averages, and truly speaks well as to the, you know, do what you love and you never work a day in your life as well. So
yeah, I might also add that everything we do is data-based. We're data-driven. So the way the program came to us, I didn't discover it. I didn't discover any of it. I've just adapted it, is that everybody goes into a database, and Chalk now is using some of our approaches, some of our modeling, to build a registry that will be nationwide. that'll be used generally. Finally, I'll just add this. The patient care is just one aspect of what we do, okay? So we also do teaching on the van. So we have residents and fellows and pediatric residents, allergy fellows at UCI. We have nursing students. We have pharmacy residents come on the van. It's like a ship into the community, you know? it's a different take. I mean, you can't believe the difference between being out there and being in the clinic here. And so we do that. And the final thing is we do a lot of research. We have data on about 10,000 patients.
Wow.
Very well-characterized data. And so at any moment, I can ask a question. And I have a statistician in Los Angeles, and she and I have been working for 10 years. And I've been writing, you know, 10 or 15 papers in peer-reviewed journals over the last several years because people come with ideas they want to do on the van, and we have the data. So we're furthering knowledge about how to approach asthma. So, yeah, it's what I did when I first came to UCI at the university, and I've sort of made a microcosm on the breathmobile. So, and there are about 10 programs like this around the United States.
Wonderful.
So it's something that I think is it's got traction because of inner city kids are not being addressed. There's a big disparity of care with the poor, impoverished, uneducated, or not lower educated populations. And I think the government is trying to deal with how do you decrease the disparity. Breathmobile is just one answer. There are certainly other answers to that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking. It's been truly a pleasure to have you here in the studio. Thank you for listening to episode number 25 of Chalk Radio. You just heard Dr. Gallant, medical director of the Breathmobile at Children's Hospital of Orange County, discuss the importance of managing asthma. Stay tuned for more episodes and health topics from Chalk Radio. Visit chalk.org/health for more information or follow Chalk on social media. We are at Chalk Children's on Instagram and Twitter, and we are at facebook.com/chalkchildren's. Again, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.